Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Right, guys, welcome back to Coaching Conversations with Pete and Yas. But before we get to today's episode, just a quick announcement from our partnership with St. Mary's University Twickenham.
Yeah, so thanks for having me. I'm Ashley, our performance football coaching course lead. As you know, as a member of our alumni, our course is unique around the world. So we believe that we have a distance learning model that kind of works for everyone, regardless of where they are in the world. They can study football performance coaching from their environment and put it into their context.
Amazing. And who is it for?
So we really have lots of different unique opportunities. So you can be a pro licensed coach that we've had in the past. You could be a level 2 UEFA B coach. It's about putting it into your context. So we'll expose students to match analysis, contemporary football coaching cultures, and they can put that into their own practice and improve their knowledge and understanding of the game.
Thank you for that, Ash. And as an alumni member of St. Mary's University Twickenham, I'm proud to announce the partnership that we've got going on, where each week myself and Pete will be delivering conversations around different how-to elements, analysis tips, and obviously some insights from our own experiences as coaches and coach developers. So catch that on YouTube and every week on all major platforms where you can hear it in audio form as well. Right, guys, welcome back to Coaching Conversations with Pete and Yas. This week we'll be discussing dealing with parents. Pete, straight in.
Okay, I think... You know, we the term dealing with parents is
quite a conflict.
Yeah, that's right, yeah, because it's almost like that they're a problem straight away, because we're saying, oh, dealing with parents. I hear this a little bit. Oh, dealing with parents is always the most difficult thing. I think of it in this way, is that if you've got kids, and if you're the coach, you were the coach last season, there was another coach, and you've come in. Mm. What you have to think about, well, what was your thoughts when the other coach was coaching, if you see what I mean?
Okay.
So you don't all of a sudden, because you've been given the jacket, that all of a sudden you're
take on a new role.
Yeah, you're omnipotent. You're not. You're still a parent, especially if you've got a child in the team. But I think one of the most important things is to realise, especially at grassroots level, more at grassroots level we'll talk about, is that the parents are a resource. Mm. And I think it's really, really important to understand that. But that resource has got to work within a framework. So when you have your codes of conduct, your player behaviour charters, your parents and carers charters, all those sort of things, it's really important that people know exactly where they stand within that. So most clubs survive or fall by the amount of interaction that the parents have within the club. Mm. If the parents don't put in a shift, getting the kids there, you know, helping out fundraisers, all that sort of stuff, they don't do any of that. The clubs will fold. So we have to understand that. So by saying parents, let's just stop with the parents bit and talk about people. Mm. How do we deal with people? And when we're talking about dealing with people, we're normally talking about dealing with. If they're not a problem. It's when they become a problem. So that's what we're talking about.
Yeah. So I think for me, no, I think you're right. Spot on. Straight off the top, I think it is about the language being used. I think often, I refer to it as dealing with parents because that's often how it's described. Whereas I like to put, challenge people who've got that perception and saying, well, have you ever thought about it as ineffectively collaborating with parents? Mm. And then effectively collaborating with parents. Mm. Because that's the fundamental difference, right? Like you've hit the nail on the head in a couple of things there. Like they are fundamentally key stakeholders in this process. Mm. Now, I've been coaching for nearly 13, 14 years now, and I've never yet met one parent, regardless of the age of the players, regardless of the gender of the players, that has ever had a situation, or I've never been in a situation where I can say, that parent is a bad parent. Do you know what I mean? However, are they misinformed? Are they undereducated, potentially? Are they uninformed? Mm. But never I could question the intent behind it, right? So I think the collaboration piece is so key. Just little things like you said, like the interactions around, well, What are we going after in training? What is the plan for the match day? You know, how well do the parents understand that stuff? Because if they understand that stuff, now they can be a bit more guided, deliberate and intentional with their efforts to support in that moment. For some parents, if they don't know any other, you know, other way, then all they're going to try and do is maybe coach the team on the match day from the sidelines. Or maybe they're, you know, supporting, trying to support their child or the players in the team by offering them incentives and things like that. So it's often a lack of education or lack of understanding and, yeah, probably alignment around what the club are trying to do, the coach is trying to get from the environment, but also what the player and parents understand from the process.
Well, that's really important because I think if you think about it in this way, if we look at a parent who starts to give their child a bonus for scoring goals, which you hear a lot, you then have to start to think about, well, how does that affect the child? Because the child's now thinking about the bonus, the extra fiver that they're going to get because mum or dad have said, I'm going to give you this because you scored a goal. One of the things that I remember a club I was at, and there was a parent who was doing that, and I say, and what I did was I took the child off because the child, because the parent had said, if and I, because they didn't say it to me because they knew that I would have been, I was having nothing, none of it. So when I heard about it, I said, if he scores a hat trick, his dad's going to give him 20 quid. And I went, all right, okay. So he scored two. And it's 15 minutes to go, and we did rotations of 15 minutes. I went, off you come, all right? And he looks, stands there, and I thought, go on, tell me why you want to stay on, right? But he couldn't, because he knew that if he said it to me, there's been no way he was going to go back on. And I thought,
how old was the player at the
concert? He was 11.
Yeah.
Can you believe that? 11 years old. So I kind of thought to myself, no, I'm going to, you know, and the dad came up to me and said to me afterwards, oh, he was on a hat trick. You could have let him stay on. I said, really? Why would I have done that? It was his turn to come off. He says, yeah, but I said, why is it so important that he scores that hat trick? You know, we're talking about the team here. Explain to me, what would he have got if he'd have scored the hat trick? And then he blushed because he knew then at that point that I knew. Now, so dealing with something like that is around, you have to be, sometimes have to be quite strong. I was quite lucky because I didn't have a child in that particular team. Becomes more difficult when parents have a child in the team because they have to be careful that they don't either make their child suffer because they're not doing things in the right way or give their child too much, which again, I've seen, you know, where a child never leaves the pitch because dad's,
parent is in charge.
Normally dad is in charge. But I think when we talk about other things around parenting, is this idea of you know poor behaviour, you know, shouting at referees and that sort of stuff. That's something, again, your club's code of conduct's got to take care of that.
But I think I get you and I fully agree with you. However, I think the challenge some clubs have, and I think you've alluded to this earlier, in that fundamentally the parents are the customers, right? The child is the customer. And if there's enough parents doing that, whether you've got a code of conduct or not, if you try to, I guess, sanction too many parents, you're going to have no team. So, you know, and I think that's often a conundrum for a lot of coaches. It's almost like, well, I can't say nothing to Pete because Pete's, in some ways, he's a bit of a ringleader for the rest of the parents as well, because that's another challenge that does exist, right? You've got some people who are a bit more influential amongst parent groups. So, you know, how do you deal with that?
Well, that's you deal with that right at the very beginning. Because if you don't deal with it right at the beginning, you say, right, this is what you're signing up to, and you make it really explicitly clear. And then you start to see that ringleader type person starts coming in. They're doing things that are not beneficial to the team. You pull that person because you know, I had to do that before. I pulled the person and said, "You, I said to you at the start of the season, this is what we're going after. You signed up to this. So why are you now going against that? What's the problem?" And then you say that the parents are the customers. True, but as a coach, you're the shopkeeper.
Yeah.
So you have to start to think about who do you allow into your shop.
Yeah.
So
and I think just to cut you on that, I think it's such a great point because that is the challenge sometimes, right? I mean, I'm supporting a group of coaches at the moment, working with different players, and some of the complaints that they get and they share with me, it's almost like, well, why are they complaining? They decided to come to this place knowing this is what it was, right? You can't, like, I don't know, I can't think of a great example other than right now, you know, I've gone and bought a Pepsi thinking it was going to be a Coke. I've clearly picked
other
up the Pepsi.
Other brands are incredible.
do you know what I mean? But, like, you've come, everything's been given to you on the outset that this is what you're signing up to. And I think that's one layer of it. And I think the other layer is actually then the coaches having the capability to hold the people accountable to that.
I mean, but that's a skill that's a human skill. And that's the thing is that we mustn't forget that we have certain skills that we have to deal with, we use in our day to day. So most of the parents have a job. They, you know, some of them might be in charge of people and so on and so on. And they have to think about, well, actually, how would I deal with somebody, if somebody was doing this in my workplace, somebody was behaving like this in my workplace and I was in charge, well, actually, the same skills that you'd use there are the same skills you'd use in football.
That logic goes out the window sometimes, right?
Exactly.
When it comes to football.
Exactly. Everybody loses their mind. You know what I mean? You know, common sense just goes out the window. Oh, it's football. It's like, you know.
It's still people though, isn't it?
Well, yeah. But it's like, if you think about it, if you were to, if your child was at school and you heard the teacher was shouting at the child because they didn't know their times tables, you'd be down to school straight away. But because a kid misses a shot at goal and the coach starts shouting, we think it's all right because it's football. But it's not all right. Because we have to understand that these...
And I think probably a good way to kind of maybe frame it would be that we're seeing people accept these behaviours in football because it's what they see on the telly, right? So it's what they see done with adults in a public stage, right? However, if you use your example about, you know, being in a school, well, I ain't gonna, you know, be upset with my 7-year-old or 10-year-old if they can't do master's level essays. You know what I mean? It's just not, it doesn't make sense. Why would they be able to? There'll be something uniquely possible, uniquely impossible about that situation, right? But I guess, you know, if we're looking at it from a parent's perspective, where do you think a coach should start in terms of, again, moving from it becoming dealing with the parent to collaborating with the parent?
Well, again, and I'll repeat this again, it's that piece, how you start. Everything starts, it's at the beginning. The thing about it is with what we all have to remember, whether we're parents, whether we're coaches, managers, whatever, you know, welfare officers, it's the children or the players that are the most important. Without them, we got nobody to shout at. We've got nobody to give instruction. We've got nobody to coach.
And no parents to deal with.
Exactly, yeah. Because football will always break out. Kids will go and they'll go out and they'll play football by themselves. They won't need a parent shouting at them or a coach telling them, giving them instructions or tactics or bibs or cones or whatever it is. They will just play football. So what we have to remember is that, and we have to say this to everybody concerned, that's parents, coaches, everybody, what are we here for? We're here for the kids. Okay, how are we going to make the experience of the kids the best possible experience? And then we can then start to start to think. You can then ask the simple question is, do you think that the behaviour you're showing now is helping your child to be the best that they can be? And they might say, yeah, well, he or she, they need that. They need it, this, that and the other. So, well, actually, at the start of the season, we said we weren't going to do that. You agreed to that. So therefore, you're going against that. The kids have all signed up. They said they're happy with that. So you're now going against that. So I'm sorry, so I can't.
I get that. I'm just, you know, trying to play devil's advocate now. Coach does that at the start of the season. They've laid down. I think, so my question would be, how often should those touch points be, those review points be? Because that's probably one of the biggest challenges, and that's probably the thing that probably causes the most problems for them, is that they don't often check in enough times or consistently enough to reinforce what's been agreed to, if that makes sense.
I think that I would look at it from a point of view of, I would do want to start the season, then I'd probably do one around about Christmas time, just before probably, then I'd do one probably in about February time, you know, just to make sure that everything's going all right, is everybody happy and so on and so on. It's not just to to lay down the law to parents, but it's also to say, are the parents happy? Are you happy with what I'm doing? Are you is there anything that you'd like to see more of? Do you think I'm giving all the players a fair hearing? They're all playing. Then you might start to, because one parent might go, actually, my little boy or girl actually hasn't had that many minutes, and I'm noticing that he or she's always starting sub. You might go, oh, yeah,
but, but do you know what's interesting? Because these are common problems that exist, right? Where a parent might say, "Well, my son or my daughter's not getting enough game time, or they never seem to start," and it's. My advice to coaches always just keep a log of the minutes, right? Yeah. Because the thing is, perception and reality are two very different things,
right?
So when you can go back to the parent and say, hold on a second, no, actually, your child has played 90% of the minutes.
Mm.
Now, there might be a point in there that suggests actually they don't often start the game, but they actually do still play 90% of the minutes. Mm. Now, it then becomes, again, that education piece around understanding, well, is it, what's more important? Is it the minutes? Is it the fact that they're starting? Is it there's not enough of variance of both? And there's no right or wrong in here. But you know, it's also the other side of it is, well, my child, because the bottom line is parents are always going to see it from their child's perspective, right? Yeah. It's never going to be, oh, well, Pete's kid's only got 10 minutes. Yeah, but it's not my problem.
My kid's got 8.
Do you know what I mean? So I think it's really important enough at that education piece. So, because, again, one of the challenges that will come with that is where they've been with their child, but also their own experiences. If they've been coached and if they've been in environments where, you know, they've played in teams and stuff like that, that will obviously have an influence in terms of their understanding and their perceptions of what effective support and coaching may or may not look like.
Mm-hmm.
So from that education standpoint, what are some strategies that you'd maybe utilize for yourself in terms of how you tackle that?
I think what I've always tried to be is open. Try and give as much information as I possibly can. Some information I will share, some I won't. And I think it's having that conversation with the parents. You know what we're doing, and this is what we're trying to do here. And I might explain that while we're on the touchline. So I said, you notice that we've tried to get that to happen, and this to happen, that to happen. I mean, I had a boy a couple of seasons ago. About it was last season. Didn't want to start. You know, but my aim was to try and give him the confidence to start. So, but he and there were various times when he felt. He didn't want to play for many minutes and that sort of stuff. But I had to give him that sense of
the opportunities. The
opportunities is, that's number one. Number two, that he could go in and play the minutes that he felt comfortable. But his parents, they were going, well, he should be wanting to play. He said he wanted to do this. Why hasn't he? And I thought, well, actually, you just got to let him deal with that in his own way. So speaking to the parents and saying to them, look, listen, he's got to deal with it in his own way when he feels comfortable and so on and so forth. But again, he's not having that conversation.
And I think that piece is really important because it reminds me of an experience a few months back where I was supporting a coach and a player said to the coach, they want to come off. Parents looked at it from the other side of the pitch and been like, well, why is my child not playing? Your child said they want to come off. Like, what do you want the coach to do? Like, you need to be speaking to your child now. I think that's the frustration sometimes, isn't it, in terms of dealing with parents? Because you know, who was I listening to the other day? I think it was James Madison. I think James Madison was talking about, you know, there'd be plenty of times growing up where, you know, he'd go and he'd be taken to play up from the 16s to the 18s in his youth days. But he'll be going to games where sometimes he'll go, they'll travel 2-3 hours with his dad or whatever, he wouldn't even get on the pitch. And that's some of the frustration you've got to be able to deal with, right? Because obviously the parents are now frustrated. Well, I've made this effort, I've made this journey and whatever, my child's not playing. But never actually spoken to the child to actually recognise, actually, it's got nothing to do with the coach, it's me, right? And it kind of leads me into another thought of mine in that an experience I had last year around challenging the perception and the understanding of parents around what they view development as. And success as. So I remember speaking to a parent at one point, and it was, oh, my child's not enjoying themselves anymore. Okay. So my challenge to the parent was, okay, so without referring to the number of goals they've scored, without referring to the number of assists they've made, and without referring to the results of the team, explain to me what your measurement of development is. And they couldn't. Now, I'm not saying that I've necessarily got the right answer for that, but I think that for me said it all, is that most parents, in my experience, would probably be in a similar position there where they would not be able to answer without referring to one of those three things. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, of course, that's the thing that they will go to immediately. But I think you've got to remember that we look at it from a point of view of people who spent a lot of time in the game, and we understand what development is and, and all those parts. But that then goes back to my my initial points at the start of the discussion, is about this idea of, you know, when we sit down with them, we explain that to them in our meetings. Because what we're trying to say to them is, this is what development looks like. This is the sort of things that we're going to do. These are the things that we're going to try. We may change some of that, but these are the things that we're looking to develop the child. Because I would say to the parents, at some stage, they're going to leave me and go and, and play for someone else. When they go and leave me and play for that somebody, are they going to be somebody that that new coach can go, oh, we've got to have that player? And that's the thing that we've got to remember, especially at youth level. Most of us, the majority of people who'll be watching this will be coaching youth players, all right? At some stage, that youth player is going to go out of their environment and go to somewhere else. So it's really important that we know what they're going to leave. It's almost like I would call it a technical passport that they take with them throughout their, so that when they go and they go and play somewhere else, somebody can look at them play and go, oh, that player's good. They've got, they're good at this, they're good at that, they're good at that. It stands out.
I think it's an interesting point, and I kind of, I'll leave it on this one, that for me, from a coach development standpoint, I've always looked at it as this: the coach's job is to help the players get to a point that they didn't see was possible, but the coach developer's job is to get to the coach to the point where that they didn't feel was possible. And I think within that, you then start to say, right, okay, well, almost never be comfortable with where your players are at or what they're showing. Take them beyond that. So that would be my last thing. About yourself?
Yeah, I think on this one, it's have the conversation with the parents. Don't be frightened to have sometimes difficult conversations. And secondly, thirdly, is to remember that you, if the parents have signed up to your code of conduct, ensure that you keep reminding them of that, that they've signed up to that code of conduct. Because if you do that, I think you're pretty much on a way to ensuring that you don't have too many difficulties.
Awesome. Well, there you have it, guys. Another coaching conversation with Pete and Yas, where today we discussed how to deal with parents or potentially move towards collaborating with them. Let us know your thoughts. Leave a comment. Make sure you subscribe, and we'll take care. Take care, and we'll see you next week.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.